I'd like to welcome everybody here and proceed with our workshop. We want to welcome all the new members. The format we're following today and tomorrow, tomorrow's format is pretty standard operating procedure. When you look at tomorrow's agenda today, it's a bit different. We're starting an hour earlier. Because we do have a lot of material we want to acquaint you with, and we also have some very timely topics that need to be covered today also. I would first like to just start over here at my far right with Helen and go around the table and have everyone introduce themselves. And I would like to say, Helen, before, everyone has a seating chart. We do have one correction. Helen has actually been appointed to fill. Helen Dragas at the far end on the right is actually serving an urban at-large position. And Harry Lester, also to the two from her, Harry is actually a representative from the Hampton Roads District. With that correction, Helen, let me start with you and just come around this way.
My name is Helen E. Dragas.
I'm Hunter Watson from Farmville.
I'm Harry Lester from Virginia Beach.
James Keene from Vincent, Virginia.
Ken White from Lynchburg.
Ambrose Bailey from Fredericksburg.
Kenny Kling from Alexandria, Virginia.
I'm Philip Chouquette, the VDOT Commissioner.
I'm Catherine Gracie with the Secretary of the Secretary of the Transportation Office.
Butch Davies from Culpeper.
Judy Connolly from Arlington.
Anthony Ware from Roanoke.
Phil Stone from Bridgewater.
I'm Jerry McCarthy from Richmond.
Okay. All right, thank you. We have absent today over next in the vacant seat between Mr. Ware and Mr. Stone, Frank Goodpasture, who has long held plans. He will join us at the next meeting. Also, Hobie Mitchell is not with us today. He is a current member of the board. Also not with us today is Leo Bavon. He is a non-voting member of the CTB by virtue of his position as director of the Department of Rail and Public Transportation, affectionately known as DRPT. Before we proceed further, I would like to now recognize the Secretary of the Commonwealth, Anita Rembler, who will lead us through the swearing-in for the new members en masse.
Thank you. Yes, en masse. And we have a community Bible here that if you choose to use, repeat after me, you can leave to your preference what you wish to repeat. And I would ask you, if you accept the challenges that Governor Warner has bestowed upon you, if you would please raise your right hand and attempt to put your left hand on the Bible here and repeat after me. I do solemnly swear, that I will support the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge all of the duties incumbent upon me as a member of the Virginia Transportation Board according to the best of my ability so help me God. Congratulations. And if I would ask you please to sign the blue sheets that are in front of you, and I need to have them returned to me, I'll wait and get them before I leave. And you have forms that are attached to that if you could take home, fill out as promptly as you can, and please return it to my office. I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Anita. Thank you. I would like to have you meet the two deputies that work very closely with me in our office. I see Ralph Davis. Ralph, would you stand? Ralph is a Deputy Secretary of Transportation. Ralph's primary responsibility is to be the liaison between our office and really the non-VDOT agencies. There are six agencies that are within this secretariat, VDOT, DRPT, Rail and Public Transportation, Aviation, DMV, the Virginia Port Authority, and then the Motor Vehicle Dealer Board. Ralph is also has the primary responsibility for our fulfilling a statutory responsibility of a bill passed this past winter that calls for the creation of an intermodal office. So Ralph's role will be a very important one. He will be working and is working with VDOT and DRPT as we proceed in executing, not so much in executing the current six-year plan that's just been adopted, but in developing the one next year. Look forward to your working with Ralph. Is Pierce Homer here? Pierce is the other deputy, works primarily with VDOT and the legislative process, and he will be here a little bit later on. Also, I'm very happy to introduce Leo Bavon. Leo is the director of the Department of Rail and Public Transportation. He's been in that position for the last 10 years, and he, along with Philip Chiquette and myself, are the non-voting members on this board. You will be receiving you've got a lot of material already in front of you that ought to keep you busy when you go to the beach. And you'll be getting more information. You'll be hearing from, for example, Linda South will be getting information to me that we'll pass on to you about how you can keep up on current events. Clipping services, the website, things of that sort. So you'll be getting more information from us than that which is before you, which is plenty. I would now like to, as part of our housekeeping matters, I would like to let me see if Philip, do you have anything you wish to say?
Just welcome. I've been here 3 months, so Ambrose and I and Butch Davies can clue you in on all kinds of information since we're old timers.
Yeah.
Seriously, I've enjoyed the 3 months, and they've gone by very quickly. I believe we're doing some good things, not only at VDOT, but in terms of the way that we're broadening our perspective as a true transportation department working together with DRPT and I really look forward to it.
Leo?
I'd like to introduce Chip Badger, who's the Assistant Director for Public Transportation, and y'all will be seeing a lot of him.
All right. Thank you, Leo. Chip, glad to have you. Next, we are represented on issues that come, transportation-related issues of legal, perceived or real legal consequences by Rick Walton with the Attorney General's office. And Rick is here today. He actually attends all the CTB meetings, and he is going to provide an overview on the conflicts of interest statements that you're required to fill out, as well as an overview on the Freedom of Information Act. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Welcome all new members of the board. I hope you will enjoy your tenure on the board. You'll find it's very fascinating, and hopefully there won't be a number of legal issues that you'll have to deal with. But two things that you do need to be aware of are the Virginia Freedom of Information Act and the Virginia Conflict of Interest Act. Under the Conflict of Interest Act, unfortunately for you all, you are one of the few boards that's specifically mentioned by the General Assembly as having to fill out the long form, which is the form that Anita has left with you that has the various schedules. Unlike a lot of boards that only have to fill out about a 2 or 3 page form. And I would encourage you to fill out these forms as soon as you can and get them to the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office, because these economic disclosure forms go in a file. They are public information, so anyone has a right to come in and review that information. I hope none of you has the same disclosure form as one of your predecessors on this board had, who's now sitting across the street as the governor. When his form was filled out, I think it filled up about half of the file cabinet with all of his various economic interests he had. But it is something that has to be done. Fortunately, a lot of the forms you can check boxes of between zero and 50,000 and 50,000 and more. I don't want to go into a lot of detail because we have a long agenda today, but before you is a summary of the State and Local Government Conflicts of Interest Act. It's sort of a two-page cheat sheet that you can look at. The situations that you will find yourself mostly facing as a member of this board are transactional issues decided by the board which could affect your personal interests. And as you'll see, personal interest is defined to cover your personal interest you have yourself, or personal interest your spouse may have, or someone living in your household, or personal interest you have because you work for a particular company. And all those personal interests are imputed to you in your dealings as a member of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. From a transactional standpoint, when tomorrow on the various agenda items that you're asked to approve, each one of those is a transaction. Now, under the Conflicts of Interest Act, you have three situations. You have transactions which affect only your interests. Very rarely, if ever, would I think something that this board considers and votes on would affect only your single interest, but it could happen. In those situations, you're required to disclose that interest, and you're required to disqualify yourself from participating in the transaction. And that's not only voting, that's meeting, that's discussion. You have to completely disqualify yourself. The second situation involving transactions is where a transaction affects your personal interest or business interest, but affects it in the same manner as it affects other businesses, other property, other interests. And that's a situation where a number of board members in the past have had potential conflicts. And perfect examples if you own property. A property owner is going to be affected by a road project. Well, you know, your property may be affected to a different degree, may cost more to acquire it, may be a larger taking, but you're being affected the same way all property owners along this project are being affected. In those situations, you have the opportunity to disclose your interests. Basically, you're a member of the Transportation Board, you own X property in this county that's being taken or affected by this road project, and in that situation, you have a choice. You can either determine that you want to disqualify yourself, again, from participating in the transaction, or you can make a declaration that you fairly and objectively can participate in this process. And you can sign that form, and all of these disclosures, let me back up, can be made in writing prior to the meeting when you get the agenda, or they can be made verbally during the board meeting. All of those are carried in the minutes of the board and a record of the board, and are kept for 5 years in the minutes and the records of the board. Third situation involving transactions is if a transaction affects the public generally. And I would not think anything that this board deals with would fall into that category. Where that's come up before, and actually with the General Assembly, and it hadn't happened recently, but if the General Assembly passes a general tax increase, it affects the public generally, so those members of the General Assembly are affected the same way everybody else is who purchases goods. But I don't believe you will face many of those situations. So primarily you need to be looking at the board agenda on location decisions that are made of whether you have property or business that's affected by it, consulting contracts that are awarded, or construction contracts that are awarded, of whether you may have an interest in a company that VDOT is doing business with, or even a subcontractor of that contractor which VDOT is doing business with. I'm available for a consultation. Many times people will call me over in the middle of a meeting, and we'll handle it then and put it on the record. And again, I would give you my card, except usually my kids, when they play with my wallet, they take all the cards out, but I'm going to make an effort tomorrow. I'll give you all of y'all a card with my phone number on it to give me a call. So the transactional issues are those that you're going to be dealing with primarily. You have the disclosure issue. But one final thing that the Conflicts Act covers, and that's contracts. You are prohibited from having a personal interest any contract with this board, and obviously this board does not do a lot of contracting itself, but most importantly, from having a personal interest in a contract with VDOT. So again, it's something else to look at when you look at the definition of personal interest, of businesses in which you have a personal interest in who might contract with VDOT. Those are ones that are prohibited. With every rule, there are exceptions. And what I'd ask you is if you know of situations in which, you know, businesses that you have an interest in are doing business with VDOT, we need to look at those. I'll give you an example. In a previous administration, a board member owned an automobile dealership. And VDOT would just go to the automobile dealership because it was most convenient to buy parts. You know, they need a battery, they needed spark plugs, you know, something like that, they would just go. Well, that individual asked for an advisory opinion of the Attorney General. And the Attorney General said, that's a violation of the Conflicts Act for you to do that. So those contracts were stopped. And the final point on the Conflicts Act, I mentioned advisory opinions. The Conflicts Act allows you to ask the Attorney General for an advisory opinion. And while that's very important because based on the facts, and you need to make sure that all the facts are before the Attorney General, but when the Attorney General issues that advisory opinion to you, that is an absolute defense to any further action being taken against you that you have violated the Conflicts of Interest Act. And again, if you have any questions on any of this, and I would ask again that you read the two pages that I've given you, I'll be more than happy to answer your questions. Freedom of Information Act, essentially dealing with documents and meetings. You all do not need to be concerned that much with documents, as most Freedom of Information Act requests are made upon VDOT, since VDOT is the one that controls most of the documents within this agency. However, there may be situations in which you get a request, because like all these documents you are taking home today, and I hope all of you have a big mailbox and a postal carrier who you've tipped very well in the past, because this person is probably going to be getting a hernia or some other health problem and carrying all the mail that you will now be getting. And that mail will be coming from your constituents in the community, will be coming from VDOT, will be coming from the Secretary's office. But all those are considered to be official records. And any notes you take, anything that you write down is considered to be an official record. So I always tell the VDOT people when I give a little speech on the Freedom of Information Act that, you know, if you're getting ready to write something, just assume that what you're writing, with all due respect, Peter, could be on the front page of the Washington Post. And so make sure what you're writing, you have no problem with that being on the front page of a newspaper. But what you all are primarily concerned with will be meetings. And the meetings of this body are public meetings, subject to all the requirements of the Freedom of Information Act. They're open meetings. You can go into closed session, but for the most part, they're open. They can be recorded, photographed. You know, minutes must be taken. The various notices given. But it's also important that you realize that committees of this board are also public bodies. And as a general rule, you have the two or more general rule that people say, well, you know, if it's two or more people getting together of the board, it's not a public meeting. I don't like that general rule because probably any time more than one of you, if two of you get together, you're discussing business of this board. I think a court could interpret that under the liberal interpretation of the Freedom of Information Act for that to be a public meeting. Moreover, if the secretary, you know, should appoint one of you to a committee or ad hoc task force, but your role there is to bring back some recommendation to this body to take action, that would be a public meeting. Because again, the definition of meeting in the Freedom of Information Act includes these committees or subcommittees that are designated by the board with some particular function to either advise the board or to perform some function for the board. Finally, by law, and I don't know if Anita sent it to you or not, that would probably weigh down the postal carrier. You're required to get a copy of the Freedom of Information Act. Consider yourself getting copies today. I've given them to you to take home. You have both the act before 2002, the other attachment, all the amendments to 2002. My cutting and pasting skills are at a kindergarten level, so I didn't want to attempt to cut and paste both of those, but you'll see some repetition. But the law requires that you read that and that you familiarize yourself with the requirements of the Freedom of Information Act. And I've been in cases before where public officials have been sued. And my client has asked the question, well, did you read the act? No. And I just sort of hit myself in the head and say, you know, you were given the act, the law requires that. You tell them no, you're violating the law. So again, what you have in your package is the act as well as a summary sheet. And again, I appreciate your patience. If you have any questions, I'll be here today. As the Secretary said, I'm here at every meeting. My phone number, if you want to write it down, is 804-786-0063. And I'm available at any time. Again, thank you.
Any questions? All right. Thank you, Rick. Before we go to our next item on the agenda, Rick mentioned committees. We have currently been operating under five committees. And let me give you the names of those committees. We're going to work on maybe changing the name, if not the substance, of some of those committees. But what the CTB has had is an internal audit committee, a committee on budget and finance, a committee on the environment, a committee on access roads and ground transportation, and a committee on rail, transit, and HOV. Now, if any of you has a particular interest in any of those subject matters, just before you leave into tomorrow's meeting, let me know and I'll try to note that, so as we work to re-examine how we think the committees can work best, I'd like to have that input. There are, of course, no meetings today or tomorrow, which is the usual case, but we will try to get on track, probably have a review of what those committees will be at our next month's workshop meeting. On the Wednesday afternoon's workshop, like today, there's no action items. It's just things that we need to be well informed about and frequently relate to upcoming votes. At this time, I'd like to recognize Ms. Barbara Reese. Barbara is on loan from the Senate Finance Committee. She is filling on an interim basis the position of Chief Financial Officer of VDOT, and she, as part of our orientation session, she is going to give us an overview of the financial operations. Barbara.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. There's three documents that are in front of you that we're going to work from this afternoon in this first presentation, so I'll point those out. First off, the big book that's called 6-Year Program, One Time and One Budget, will become your Bible. This is the document that has every highway construction project in it. And it may be referred to during the course of this first presentation. The second document you have is the annual budget for VDOT. It's a small book. Each of you should have it at your desk. And then the third document, which has this presentation from you, is called Comprehensive Financial Overview. And this is the document in the white notebook that we'll be working from initially. The presentation is in the front pocket of that notebook. There are going to be three of us that will speak for this first presentation. As the Secretary said, I'm Barbara Reese. Two of the division directors here at VDOT, John Lawson, who heads up the financial planning, which is financial planning, as it says, cash forecasting and budget operations, will be doing part of the presentation, as will Charlie Rasnick, who is the statewide urban engineer. There are four key questions that this presentation tries to address for you. First off is, what gives you policy guidance on transportation resources? How do you determine how much in transportation resources you have to allocate and spend? And then how do you make decisions on how we plan to spend our transportation resources? And then lastly, what are our most immediate financial management challenges? I'm sure all of you have been aware of all the press that's been out there for the last 6 months or so about our financial management. And Walt Kucharski will be here, the Auditor of Public Accounts, will be here at 3 o'clock to present his findings. And so we'll get as far as we can through this before 3 o'clock, and then we will be turning it over to Mr. Kucharski. Turning to page 5 of the presentation. There's four sources of documents, basically, that direct how you can use transportation revenues. First off is the Code of Virginia, Title 33. I think you may have a copy of the Highway Laws of Virginia in front of you. The Appropriation Act, which is the state budget. It's a two-year budget. The Virginia Transportation Act of 2000, also affectionately referred to as the VTA. And then federal law. And when we talk about money, particularly related to VDOT, but really to all the transportation agencies, we talk about the HMOF, which is the Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund, and that was the one that was established almost 100 years ago to finance transportation in Virginia. And then the Transportation Trust Fund that includes the Construction Fund, the Airport Fund, the Port Fund, and the Mass Transit Fund, and that is the fund that was created in 1986 during the special session with Governor Beliles. Title 33 of the Code of Virginia. It says that the CTB is responsible for allocating transportation revenues in the Transportation Trust Fund. It does not speak to the board's role in the Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund. It just speaks to the Transportation Trust Fund. It requires that programs be funded in the following order. This is considered legislative intent on how the General Assembly and it's those in there now and before want you to allocate resources. First to our maintenance efforts, then payments to localities for maintenance, the department's administration and operations, and then lastly, highway construction. The Appropriation Act, which is the state budget, it's a two-year budget. It overrides any other state law. In other words, Title 33 may tell you to do one thing, but the Appropriation Act can tell you to do the exact opposite. And the Appropriation Act takes precedence. It appropriates revenues for expenditure. It's based on an official state revenue forecast. It establishes our spending authority. It establishes the department staffing levels. And it sets forth policy direction on how resources must be spent. And some of those examples that, and as you serve time on the board, you'll get more and more familiar with these. One of the things that the Appropriation Act does is integrates federal transportation funding requirements and the state funding formulas. It also dictates and explains and expresses legislative intent on the use of highway construction funding for both mass transit capital projects as well as their operating cost. The Route 58 Development Fund, which is the Route 58 Corridor Development Program, a major debt program down along Southside Virginia. And in tab one of your white notebook is a copy of the transportation section out of the current Appropriation Act for transportation. Secretary Clement will tell you it is a mind-numbing reading, but it is probably something in your spare time on the beach you should take a look at. The Virginia Transportation Act was enacted by the 2000 General Assembly. It's behind tab two of your notebook, in your notebook. I would also suggest at some point at least go to the last few pages of that and read some of the legislative intent. You will hear a lot of discussion, particularly when we talk about putting the six-year program together, about the Virginia Transportation Act and its dictates. It was enacted in the 2000 General Assembly to address project deficits, cash deficits, and funding gaps in that program in that year. And it also established a priority transportation fund and had certain revenue sources deposited into it. In that year, gasoline tax collections were changed where that collection was going to occur. It's called tax at the rack. One-third of the estimated revenues from insurance license taxes, those taxes that you and I pay when we buy homeowners or car insurance or everything, it's supposed to be one-third of that revenue is to be deposited to this fund. And then any actual revenues above forecast, out of that official forecast in both the HMO and the construction fund and the mass transit fund are to be deposited in the priority transportation fund. And the General Assembly always has the right to appropriate other revenue to that fund and has chosen to do so from time to time. The Virginia Transportation Act also authorized $800 million in FRANs, or Federal Reimbursement Anticipation Notes, to finance the next phase or complete financing on 121 specific projects around the Commonwealth. For those projects, those funding needs, and you can see there's a list of those projects in tab 2 as part of the bill, many of them you will recognize. They were identified by local governments, metropolitan planning organizations, VDOT, DRPT, many sources identified what those funding needs were almost 3 years ago. And it appropriated $473 million in state general fund tax revenues to specific projects to meet cash deficits. And again, that list is also in part of that bill. Both of the project lists allow, if the bill allows, that spending can be modified within that list and within the district to address certain cash flow needs. And a key point, and this is something, again, as you become more familiar with the six-year program about the Virginia Transportation Act, the allocation formulas for most state funds have been in place since 1986. It tells you how much Lynchburg District's going to get, or Bristol District, or Northern Virginia District. But the VTA did not follow any existing allocation formula. Rather, it was directed at perceived funding gaps around the state. It was more directed at gaps than it was in any particular Bristol District should get X share, Northern Virginia certain share, that type of thing. It does represent a legislative consensus on where funding should be directed. And in that, something that's been somewhat unique historically is that that legislation also viewed mass transit projects, highway projects, rail projects, port projects, all as just one huge transportation project. There was no distinction made between, well, how much are we giving to mass transit, how much are we giving to highway construction. It was all viewed as these are projects in transportation that we need to move forward on. Now, since the VTA was enacted, as all of us know, the economy has declined and anticipated revenues have not been forthcoming. In other words, the money that was supposed to be deposited to the Priority Transportation Fund or the general funds have not necessarily been there, but the projects are still going forward. They are in your six-year program, and VDOT and DRPT are responsible for moving those projects forward. And in part to address some of that, this last session that just ended in March, the General Assembly did take action to authorize additional FRANs up to $1.2 billion, and you're going to hear more about the debt issues later today. Federal law. Now, if you really want to go to sleep on a beach, take this along. This is an incredibly complex set of laws. The federal highway funding authorizations occur every 6 years. In some ways, this board has a unique opportunity, as the secretary does and as the governor does, in that the current federal authorization for transportation, T21, stands for the Transportation Efficiency Act of 2000, is set to expire during at the beginning of federal fiscal year 2003, which is next October. Federal law stipulates how federal aid funding is distributed among the types of roadways throughout Virginia, across the nation, for what purposes the funding can be used, and in many cases how the funding has to be distributed within the state itself. Federal funds are not distributed as lump sum grants. We don't get $700 million a year in federal money that's deposited into the bank accounts on July 1st. We can ask for reimbursement of a bill. In other words, a contractor sends VDOT a bill for $10 million. Federal funds may be 80% of that $10 million or $8 million of it. We have to pay that $10 million bill out of our cash, state cash first, and then we can ask for a reimbursement from the federal government. And that's a key point as we look at cash flow each and every day. We do bill the federal government each day. We used to be the only state. I'm not sure if we're still in that situation or not. Virginia does utilize all of its federal highway funds in its construction and mass transit programs. We do not allocate any funding from the federal government to maintenance. Some states do. Required distribution of federal funds. Interstate, there's five key programs in the federal funding categories. I'm going to walk through each of them very briefly. Interstate maintenance, also affectionately referred to as IM. It is used to resurface, restore, rehabilitate, and reconstruct most routes on the interstate system. You cannot expand, cannot add a lane with IM funds. You cannot move it beyond its existing boundaries. National Highway System, or NHS funding. It's improvements to rural and urban roads that are part of the NHS, and that includes the interstate system, but it also includes roads like the Fairfax County Parkway, Route 460, 29, those type of roadways that are critical to are considered critical to national safety. Went too far. On page 14, I'm going to walk through this quickly. I'm sorry, I went one too far, and it's too difficult to make it back up. Surface Transportation Program, which is also called STP, is a broad category of funds, federal funds, and they're distributed based on a variety of formula and rules. There's 10% of the STP money, it's up on the chart now, is used for what's called enhancement funds, and those are in your six-year program. Sidewalks, bicycle paths, historical preservation, scenic highways, landscaping, beautification, all kinds of things can be funded out of enhancement. In the past, the way that's been done is through a competitive grant application process that's held each spring, with the board making the final decisions on projects. Safety projects, another 10% of the money has to go to highway safety and rail safety. Population, 50% of the money has to go be distributed throughout the state by certain population brackets. Most of that money is distributed to the three major urban areas in Virginia, Richmond, Northern Virginia, and Hampton Roads. And to make it even better, the population requirements in federal law and how you distribute it and what population data you use is different than what's required in state law. Bridge money. Bridge money, federal bridge money, is used states in their programs to replace or rehabilitate deficient highway bridges that are located on any public road. That's anywhere. It's not just on the federal highway system. It can be on any public road in Virginia. CMAQ, or congestion mitigation and air quality money. Again, this money is designated to the three large non-attainment areas in Virginia. That's Northern Virginia, Richmond, and Hampton Roads. And you have to either be in non-conformity with federal air quality standards or in a maintenance status. And then minimum guarantee. Minimum guarantee is the pot of money that when T21 was enacted back in 1998, all the states, there was a big issue, and Virginia's one of them, that Virginians don't get back all the federal tax dollars they pay on motor fuels. It's distributed to another state. Back when T21 was enacted, we got about 80 cents on the dollar back in Virginia. Now there's a guarantee embedded in T21 that says we will get at least 90.5%. So when the federal government goes through and allocates all the money to STP, CMAQ, and all those other categories of funding, if we don't receive 90.5% of our federal gas taxes, then there is this pot of money that we get that's very discretionary for expending to make us whole in that regard. Forecasting resources. I'm going to turn this now over to John Lawson, who is the Financial Planning Director, and he's going to walk you through forecasting as well as budget.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Once we go through all of our laws and regulations that you just kind of heard about that tells us how we can use money, we have to figure out, well, how much do we have to use? And in forecasting our resources, we do that. We look at our revenues, we look at cash flow, and then we look at the actual the budget authority, the allocations we have then for each of the programs. I figure I had to work the thing here. Our revenue sources on this slide show you kind of an overview of the state revenue sources that are dedicated to transportation. For motor fuel taxes, they're 17.5 cents. There's a 3% tax on motor vehicle sales. And you see there's a portion of the motor vehicle license fee that is dedicated for transportation. And also there is, of that 4.5% general sales and use tax, 0.5% is dedicated to transportation. And that was part of the change that was done in the 1986 special session when the Transportation Trust Fund was created. In forecasting our revenues, we as VDOT do not forecast the majority of our revenues. Most of the revenues are forecasted by the Department of Taxation. They use a process that duplicates, for the most part, the general fund forecasting process to forecast the transportation revenues. They utilize, you know, key factors such as gallons sold or car sales to determine what we can expect to receive during the not only the upcoming year but the upcoming 6 years for revenue forecasting and subsequent allocation or program projections. They also take into account in doing this economic models for the nation as well as the state to try to get a good handle and to have a, you know, educated forecast as to where we're going in the future. At VDOT, we do forecast the federal revenue. We utilize tables that are provided to us by the Federal Highway Administration called apportionment, the computation tables. And we use those tables to derive at the anticipated federal revenue that will be available to us for over the next 6 year period. The combination of these, the state revenues as well as the anticipated federal revenues, are submitted to taxation and become the official revenue estimate that we utilize for not only our annual program, but also utilize for planning purposes in the 6 year program. We also look at the forecasting of the cash, both inflows and outflows of those revenues for each of the major programs or major funds. For the state revenues, we utilize the official revenue estimates as the total amounts that we can anticipate collecting. And then we utilize historical collection averages that says, you know, tell us how we can anticipate collecting it throughout the year. Because it's very cyclic. We get different, the flow is not flat across 12 months. For federal revenue, that is actually based upon, our collections are actually based upon the work that we anticipate. As Barbara mentioned earlier, we collect federal revenue based on work performed. So we take the projects that we anticipate performing using to receive federal participation on and cash flow them and determine not only the expenditure output for the project, but the anticipated federal reimbursement according to that. That leads to, you know, the other expenditure programs within the department we utilize. For administration, for example, we have our program budget for administration, and we use a historic average flow per month of what that payout would be. And for construction, as I mentioned, for the federal projects, we do utilize an ad schedule that supports the six-year program that you have in front of you, and then using those anticipated start dates, the anticipated expenditure amount of those projects, we forecast the actual expenditure what those projects will cost, therefore the actual cash flow that would be associated with those. In doing the cash forecasting, we are able to determine whether or not the program, whether the work plan that we have set forth, we have the cash to support, which gets to timing of when we do our work. Not just that we anticipate collecting X million dollars, but we make sure that we plan to do the work to need the money as the money comes in. And by doing this, we can determine whether or not there need to be adjustments made to the plan, whether the schedule that we've set is appropriate or whether there needs to be changes, delays, or advancements are possible in different projects. We do this process not only at the beginning of the year with the development of the program, but also periodically during the year, because as schedules change or prices change, we have to reforecast to make sure that we still are staying on target and that the work that we are still planning to do is feasible to carry on with. The current forecast that we are now looking at is showing that fiscal year 2003, the current fiscal year we just began in July, will be tight. We're looking at cash balances in the maintenance fund and the construction fund, and we are forecasting them to be very close. We are seeing, though, an improvement beginning next year, fiscal 04, with some of these actions that we're taking now starting to allow us to build a healthier cash balance. On this slide, you'll see the actual cash balances as of July the 12th. And if you look, looking at these balances, we've also made a few changes, or a few things have changed since July the 12th. Our balances as of today, we have an HMOF balance of $48 million. The Transportation Trust Fund balance is $434 million. With the biggest change, or the only change actually, being in the construction fund, which is down from $157 million to $107 million. The big change that has taken place here is that we have made transfers from the Highway Maintenance and Operating, I'll get this straight here. We have transferred from the Transportation Trust Fund, or the construction fund, $47 million to Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund. This is not a loan like you heard a discussion of last year this time. These are planned transfers. As part of the budget for VDOT for this fiscal year, we anticipated that there would be a need to transfer $147 million from the Transportation Trust Fund to the Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund. And we have begun making those transfers. Again, for July, we have transferred $47 million, and that should be sufficient to carry us through this end of this month. Moving on a little bit now to how we actually allocate the use of our resources. We take all of the estimated revenues that we have been able to determine and compile, and utilizing the Code of Virginia, the Appropriations Act, and the other items that was mentioned to you before that guide our distribution of funds, and then determine how much are available for each program, whether that be administration, construction, maintenance, for not only the coming year, but as well as the next 5 years, for a total of a 6-year program. Just to kind of summarize, the fiscal year 2003 VDOT budget totals $3.4 billion, and I think all of you have this document in your stat. Of that $3.4 billion, about $2.9 billion is to be utilized by VDOT for actual road either maintenance or construction. And following with the hierarchy of the funding as described earlier, first thing that we have to fund is the maintenance program. And we are showing a maintenance budget, and this is being VDOT maintenance work that we do in-house, of about almost $900 million. We pay out to localities another $250 million for their ground transportation work. And then we have internal operations, administration, as well as other operations, totaling another $250 million. The remainder, about $1.5 billion, is for the construction program. And these monies are distributed, as you see here on this chart. Also, just for reference, in your budget document, pages 15 and 16 provide a good 2-page summary of all of the revenue sources and all of the expenditure programs. As required by code, the revenues collected for the Transportation Trust Fund are distributed not only to transportation, but there are portions required to go to the other transportation modes. The airport fund receives about 2.4%, and the port fund receives 4.2%. These are, again, formula driven, and you as board members do not have any discretion in how that and the amount that is determined to go to those funds. That is code-driven. Fiscal 2003, those amounts are to the airport fund are about $17 million and about $30 million to the ports. Mass Transit also receives a formula share of the Transportation Trust revenues, that being 14.7%. And again, that is not a discretionary or flexible decision. It is code-driven. And for fiscal 2003, that amount is almost $100 million. In addition, rail and public transportation receives a lot of guidance on how they are to fund their programs through the Appropriation Act, through the VTA and the Rail Access Program. The administrative cost for DRPT is paid for by the the Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund. The total funding from VDOT or from the transportation to DRPT for fiscal year 2003 is $138 million. At this point, I did the same thing. Need to back up one. Charlie Rasnick will now come forth and he'll talk to you about how the VDOT's construction dollars are distributed.
Good afternoon. I'm Charlie Rasnick, the state urban engineer. I'll spend a few minutes with you this afternoon talking about how do we distribute the remaining 78.7% of the Transportation Trust Fund revenues. This includes all the funds that are available to the Department for Construction. In FY03, that's $1,493.5 million is what our expected construction fund is going to be. Specific funding for identified projects or programs, including debt, revenue sharing, access programs, federal demo projects. In FY03, it's a total of $538.3 million. FRANS and proceeds, as well as other VTA funding, amount to $347 million. And in FY03, there is $608 million available for interstate, primary, secondary, and urban construction projects. The Code of Virginia, Title 33-1-23, gives you the requirements for the distribution of these funds. The first off the top is the match for the interstate program, and then there is a requirement for 5.67% of the remaining funds to go to unpaved roads around the state. Right now, we still have about 10,000 miles of unpaved roads that these funds are to cover. Once that is made, then the state says that the state statute says that we will distribute the remaining funds, 40% to the primary system, 30% to the secondary system, and 30% to the urban system. The funding for each of the other systems are further allocated by district and locality. The interstate federal funds are allocated, again, by state code and by the Appropriations Act. The Act provides that the National Highway System, and that, again, as Barbara mentioned earlier, that's the interstate system plus selected other arterials around the state. Those funds, are for the state formula matching purposes, are treated as interstate and allocated accordingly. The CTB, that is, this board, has the discretion to distribute the federal interstate funds and the required state match based on statewide project needs. And there's no required sub-allocation by district or formula. The primary system. Title 33 requires that the primary system share be 40%, and that's distributed by formula to each of the 9 construction districts. And that's based on 70% by primary vehicle miles of travel. That's the number of vehicles per mile of roadway times the number of miles, and then 25% by the primary lane miles. For every 2 lanes of roadway, for every mile of 2-lane roadway, we have 2 lane miles. And then 5% based upon the needs factor. This board has the discretion to allocate funding to specific primary projects within each district. These are the construction districts. I'm sure you're familiar with those. By now, if not, this gives you the layout of how the districts are divided in the state. There's 9 construction districts. secondary systems. State code requires that the secondary share be 30% of the formula distribution. That's distributed to the counties, to each of the counties, 80% by population, 20% by the land area. The project distribution is done by each respective county board of supervisors in consultation with VDOT's resident engineers. The state statute also establishes the percentage and the method of distributing the unpaved road funds. It's based upon the number of unpaved road miles per county that's receiving those, that's to receive those funds, their percentage to the total. Now, the CTB has no discretion in the allocation of those funds. The urban system. State statute requires that, again, 30% of the formula distribution go to the urban system, and that's the arterials and collector roads in each city and town that's above 3,500 population. There's a few other towns that are lesser population that that are also included. There's 81 of those municipalities around the state that receive these funds. Project distribution is done on the individual by the, each individual county, town council or city council in consultation with VDOT. Again, the CTV has no discretion on the allocation of these funds per project. The summary of or the big picture for the distribution of these funds, you might look in your green book on page 9. That has the, I'll just spend a moment with that. If you look at your green book on page 9, that's the summary or the big picture of the distribution of funds for the Bristol District. If you'll glance at that, if I'll take an extra moment here. I've been through this rather quickly. If you have any questions about that big picture of the Bristol District, that's just, you can go through and look at each one of the districts. But this one will give you an example of the big picture for each one of the districts. And it has the listing of each type of funds that are going to be spent for construction in those in that particular district. Are there any questions?
Just like to follow up a couple points that Charlie and John both made. First off, I'm not a highway engineer, so it took me a long time to figure out what the secondary system was versus the primary and urban. So let me give you my quick way of thinking about it. Primary system is a non-interstate, traditionally a four-lane highway. If you think about Route 29, 460, 360, those type of roadways. A secondary route in Virginia are those that used to be Route 600 or above. Now, a lot of those are the county secondary roads off of a primary route typically. That's how to think about it. Urban is any road generally within a city's boundaries. So when you're in Virginia Beach, you're basically on the urban system except for when you're on what used to be Route 44. So that's just sort of an easy way. And there will be staff that you will meet over the course of the next month or so that can do a better job of explaining that. But that's my quick and dirty way of thinking about it. Just in terms of the six-year program that Charlie just had you look at, that is a $7.3 billion program for the 6 years. There are 1,157 total projects in that document. 873 of those projects are in the construction phase. 284 projects are in the development phase. And when we talk about development, we're talking about preliminary engineering. You're designing the roadway or you're acquiring right of way. So just as an overall number, just so you have a sense of its value, that's where we are. Financial management challenges. Many of you, I'm sure, as I said earlier, have read the papers and know some of the things that have been going on here at VDOT over the course of the last several years, and the things that Commissioner Suchet alluded to earlier that we're working very hard to repair and to move forward on, and the Auditor of Public Accounts will certainly be filling you in on his blueprint for what we need to do to go forward. John talked about a lot earlier about the cash forecast model that we're using about determining whether or not we have enough money to spend based on the plan that we have out. That is a new process that we are just now implementing. For the last couple of years, we'd really gotten away from, or the department had gotten away from, looking at cash and how much was available in awarding projects without any consideration of that. And that is something new that we are undertaking now and making first steps in, but I'm not going to speak to the auditor's findings, but just to say that in terms of financial management challenges, his blueprint that he will be sharing with you this afternoon and that he released with to us last week, you'll hear about those recommendations and his findings shortly. It was a tremendous effort on his part and his staff's part to give us an idea of where they thought we needed to go in terms of our financial management processes. And I would point out the next couple slides, what I'm going to be talking about are our immediate, and when I say immediate, I mean next 6 months, financial management challenges. They're not necessarily the things that we have to accomplish for the long term, but they are sort of the things that are truly things that we have to get done to make our work better. There are some revenue changes that we are concerned about from two fronts. First off is at the federal level, just like the state has and like a local government has and your own checkbook has, is if actual revenue collections don't come in as they anticipated and that we forecasted or they forecasted for us, then there are actions taken known as RABA, Revenue Aligned Budget Authority, that reduces how much money the state has to spend. Well, that happened to us for federal fiscal year 03, or for fiscal 03, where they said we're going to have $116 million less in funding, federal funding, this current fiscal year than they thought we would have last year. So we had to remove $116 million out of the program. That is reflected in the six-year program. As you can imagine, the public outcry about that was fairly loud in Washington. And both the House and the Senate now have bills out there for transportation spending that restores the what's called the RABA cut to each state. But the president hasn't signed any law. It's actually not even out of committee yet. So we did not assume that. If that happens and suddenly $116 million reappears, I would imagine that this board will be taking some action sometime after around October 1st to restore that funding and to program it to specific projects around the state. In terms of the state, in tab 3, and this is something you might want to spend a little bit of time on when you do get a chance, transportation revenues, and John talked about the forecasting process that is followed. Those revenues, at least through the end of May, and it looks like through the end of June, are coming in as well as the estimate said they would, which is good news. Of course, a lot of that is based on motor vehicle sales. As we all know, after September 11th, we went to 0% financing and everybody bought a new vehicle. So we've been the beneficiary of that because that means our sales and use tax, state motor fuel sales and use tax, has gone way up. What that means for next year, when suddenly, when we thought people would be buying a car and they don't buy a car, is unknown right now, and the Department of Taxation is in the process of updating revenue forecast. General fund revenues, which pays for education, higher education, mental health, all those other things that state government is responsible for, have slid dramatically. They've been revised downward twice since December in terms of total revenue, and now are expected to miss the estimate by $200 million. Well, the state basically budgets almost everything it expects to receive in revenue to some type of spending program. So that would mean that there could potentially be cuts. And in fact, last week, Governor Warner told a group of us that he expects that there will have to be additional cuts made to fill the revenue gap in the general fund, and that transportation, while we are not a general fund agency, may have to contribute some to filling that gap. So that is an unknown at this time and something that we are obviously watching very closely. Because of what that would mean to you is that you would have to take that 2003 budget and construction program, and if suddenly we're told find $50 million, we have to revise those documents and that plan of action to come up with that kind of money. FRAN allocations. This thing is not moving. We talked a little bit about the FRANs, which are the debt in the Virginia Transportation Act. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because it's part of the debt presentation later this afternoon. As I mentioned earlier, the 2002 General Assembly did expand the use of FRANs to all projects listed in the Virginia Transportation Act. There used to be this wall between what were listed in the first part of the bill versus what was listed in the last part of the bill. And they increased how much debt we can have outstanding at any one time for FRANs to $1.2 billion. In part, the reason they did that was $317 million of the sales and use tax money, the half cent that John talked about, for FY03 has been transferred from the Highway Construction Fund to the state general fund to help balance the revenue shortfalls that were there back in, well, really February. So FRANs that we're going to be selling this fall are going to be used for a one-to-one substitute through all those formulas that we just talked about, the 40% to the primary, 30% to the secondary, and 30% to the urban system. A big area of controversy, which you will probably hear from your local legislators or your localities that you represent, is about how the FRAN debt service in the program is allocated to individual highway construction districts. And if you looked at the end of the interstate system in the Bristol district or the primary system in the Bristol district, you'll see a line item that's called FRAN debt service, and you'll see amount in each year. And that's true in every district. The way that the Virginia Transportation Act reads, it says that the FRAN debt service shall be allocated and be proportional to the amount of FRAN proceeds, in other words, the benefit that that district is receiving from the use of the debt. In other words, you're moving a project forward, you're getting extra dollars, hypothetically, from FRAN, so you should pay part of that debt service. The final plan did not allocate debt service using that larger concept of one transportation system or whatever. It allocates debt service based on the highway construction projects only, which means in a Northern Virginia, where you have a lot of transit projects, they're paying less debt service than what you would have expected if you look at the entire list. There are no debt service or FRANs allocated to the urban system or to the cities. Good rationale for doing that, because urban cities don't get a whole lot of money each year from the transportation program through the formula, but they do have the benefit of using the FRANs for certain projects. No debt service was allocated to mass transit or rail, even though there are projects that are mass transit or rail projects that are receiving the benefit of the use of the debt. So bottom line of that is the interstate and primary systems are carrying the full burden of the required debt service payments, which means there is very small amount of dollars available, particularly on the primary system in a district. And I'll give you an example of that. In the Lynchburg district, over the 6 years, there's $36 million of money available for any new work. After you pay for debt service and after you pay off project deficits, projects that are underway or completed that have to have funding, there's $36 million in new money for you to allocate to the primary system in the Lynchburg district. That's not a lot of money when you think about all the needs. So this will be an issue, and it already is an issue, that the Secretary and the Commissioner are already talking to the General Assembly about. We need to find a better way of dealing with our debt service issue. And the program does assume about $660 million in new FRANs being sold in the 6 years. The debt service, though, for the current fiscal year, and I need to point this out, it's about $71 million. It's being paid from the Priority Transportation Fund. If you recall earlier, I mentioned that the Virginia Transportation Act established a new fund. Well, that fund does have about, I think it's about $150 million in it from prior year balances and whatnot, has not been spent. So the decision was made to pay the debt service out of that account, which is a good cash management move on our part, because that way the districts aren't impacted, and we had cash available clearly to pay that debt service. So there are no district allocations being impacted for this first year, but for the last 5 years, there is a serious impact. There is $376 million in debt service that's allocated to the 9 construction districts. And as I said, if you go to the interstate and primary system in each district, near the end of those listings, you'll see an item that's called FRAN debt service payments. And obviously, debt service requirements grow as more FRANs are sold. The next financial management challenge we have is the funding requirements on the completed and underway projects. Projects previously were started without any funding available. That's the simplest way to say it. Except for the interstate system, funding, as Charlie went through earlier, is limited to each district or locality's allocations. In other words, state law says I can give the Bristol district X number of dollars based on, in the primary system, based on their vehicle miles and other factors. The secondary system can get X number of dollars based on population and land area. There's only so much you can give based on all those factors when you calculate. But because there's $301 million in completed project costs that had to be covered in the program, it has a significant impact. And again, using the Lynchburg district, You know, it means that there's very little money. When you combine debt service and this paying off of project deficits, there's very little new money available to start new projects or to accelerate an existing project. The mitigation on the interstate system, as Charlie mentioned to you earlier, you don't have to select a project by district for the interstate system. If an interstate project on I-64 down in the Hampton Roads area needs funding, the board has full discretion. You could take all $200 million or so that's available for the interstate system and put it on one project. That is totally the board's discretion where that money goes. So the impact of debt service and whatnot on the interstate system is mitigated by that because it is a statewide program with no controls or sub-allocations among the state. But when you look at the primary, secondary, and urban, there is an impact, as we just talked about. But I need to point out to you, because you'll probably get hit with this from some of your localities, and I could name them, but I won't. The same standards of paying off project deficits, paying off a completed project, or paying off a project that's underway were applied to everybody. It made no difference who you were, where you were, or whatever. The first rule in the program that you'll see is paying off and completing the projects that are either underway or soon to be completed, because the goal is to bring the allocations of money back in line with the statutory and policy guidelines we started with earlier. Right now, the allocations aren't really there. If you look at our spending, 9% of the money goes to the Bristol District overall. There's not that much money being spent in the Bristol District because we're having to pay off deficits in other places when you look at how actual cash expenditures are going. Monitoring expenditures, which comes to the next point, which is tied to the last point. It's critical that VDOT effectively manage all of its expenditures to maintain positive cash flow so that we don't exceed our budgets. We are analyzing all of our available financial data and reports, and this has been a recent trend too, to determine what the financial management tools are that we need and what is needed. We're looking at revamping our existing financial reports so that each month you can get something that makes sense to you. We're looking at creating, and certainly we have created, a new what's called a dashboard, which is a one-shot view of construction project budgets, their spending, and their estimates, and whether or not they're on time. The two most critical issues we have, as if those aren't critical enough, are cost estimating and debt management. Back in January, it was reported to the General Assembly that the cost of construction projects at contract award were 117% higher than what we estimated when the project was first under design. And then based on a review of projects, that number, 117%, was based on a review of projects that had been advertised over a six-month period in 2001. But when you expanded it, and Commissioner Suquette did this, to include projects from the last 3 years, the 117 dropped to 86%. Not that that's a good news story, but at least it was coming down some way. The commissioner has convened a work group headed by Gary Allen, who is our CIO, Chief Information Officer and Research Officer, to look at how we do our cost estimating process, and they're making significant progress, and they will be reporting to you this fall on that work, and we will be implementing those changes. Debt service. FRANs are just one of many debt programs we have, and you're going to go over three of those later. I'm not going to spend a lot of detail on that, but work needs to be done in a whole lot of levels on this issue. Technical issues, funding utilization issues, appropriate use of debt, and long-term policy. And we plan to have all that work completed by December 2002, because if you have to go to the General Assembly with recommended changes, that's the time to do it. That completes the presentation, and I'd point out I did it in an hour and almost an hour. So, any questions?
Yeah. Okay. Is Walter here yet?
Did you say you saw him?
All right. Well, what we go to the last slide?
Sure.
We're going to pick up.
Can I
ask one quick Jerry?
Question? Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm new to this. I've never heard this before. On page 17, there's a page describing revenue sources. Is that an annual number on that page?
Yes. If you look in the far right-hand side, it says FY03. That's the amount for FY03. And if you look at, I think it's page 16 and 17 of the budget, it gives you a full picture of all the revenues. That's just our state, major state revenue sources, not just our not our federal sources or other sources. Okay. Our fiscal year is July 1st through June 30th.
Yeah, Jerry, you can identify the 1986 special session. That's, you know, when the motor fuels taxes, that's that 2.5 cents, and then so on down there. Everything TTF is 86 money. Okay. Basically for construction unless needed by maintenance.
This is only state money.
Yes, Judy?
Major, between, say, motor fuels taxes and general sales taxes, do they tend to rise and fall in the same cyclical way, or is one more reliable or consistent?
Well, sales and use tax is fairly reliable, and it's a growing source, which is important. There are periods of time during the year, obviously August, school sales, spring, Easter, those kind of things, where Christmas you see increased revenue collections, but it is a fairly reliable source. In fact, one of the things that happened in the budget this year was they accelerated a payment to collect some more money, and because it's so close, they were able to use a June of 2000 as their estimate, and they nailed it. I mean, it's a fairly reliable standard source of revenue. So yes, motor fuels taxes. Again, it's cyclical, but yes, they're fairly reliable, and you can predict pretty well.
Okay, I see Walter Kucharski is here, the Auditor of Public Accounts, and he is the next item on the agenda. I'm going to ask our commissioner to introduce him, but let me say that this was an audit that was the results of which were reported in the media in the last week or so. It came about as a result of a request from Governor Warner in February to Mr. Kucharski to undertake that examination. Philip?
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Members of the board, there's nothing that a lot of agency heads fear, I guess, more than the governor ordering an audit of their agency. But I want to tell you that having been involved with a couple different governmental agencies in different states in my career, I can say without question that the report that was delivered was not only one of the best written reports, just in terms of pure writing, but certainly met the criteria for simple, direct, easy to understand recommendations. Mr. Kucharski and I met on a biweekly basis over the last 3 months, not to jeopardize the integrity of the report in any way, but just to make sure that the cooperation that was needed from VDOT was there. Those meetings were most helpful to me. They were usually brief, 5-10 minutes at the most. Some people were surprised at my reaction to the report, that it wasn't defensive and aggressive. I thought it was a good report. I thought it was a very good report. I thought it was notable that of 62 recommendations, 50 were directed at VDOT, and in some manner or another, we were down the path on about 35 of them to take some corrective action. It's a wonderful piece of work. It is one, in all sincerity, I would advise you to read. The recommendations are clearly captured in the back and categorized by things that affect VDOT, things that affect you as a board, and things that are more associated with actions of the General Assembly or the Governor. You don't have to agree with all the recommendations, certainly, but they're easy to understand and easy to read. And it's with a lot of pleasure that I introduce Walt Kucharski to present his findings to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wasn't quite prepared. I was waiting until 3 o'clock. Mr. Secretary and members of the Commonwealth Transportation Board, thank you for giving us the opportunity to present our report on the cash management and budgeting practices of the Department of Transportation. You are now receiving copies of my remarks, the slides, and also a copy of the report. This report focuses on assessing the processes and process changes needed to increase project management and improve the six-year program. This report intentionally does not duplicate the findings and recommendations of other studies or reviews of the department. We have only referenced or included those reports as necessary or their findings for the reader to understand a process or because our findings and conclusions also support the earlier report. We understand that the General Assembly has a joint subcommittee reviewing the implementation of the recommendations of those earlier reports. The implementation of many of the recommendations or process changes outlined in this report can occur regardless of the policy selections made by the department's management or the joint subcommittee's proposal for future legislation. We believe the report provides a framework for the implementation and use of sound cash management principles and the practices and converts the six-year program to a capital budget. I would like to emphasize that this report envisions the six-year program as a capital budget that matches project cash needs with available resources in the same manner as the biennial budget proposed by the governor and reviewed and adopted by the General Assembly. Further, this report incorporates all of the enacted legislation requirements passed by the last session of the General Assembly for capital improvement and budget recommendations found in chapters 839 and 888 of the Acts of the Assembly. This report sees cash planning and project management accountability as critical to the department's ability to deliver its products. The report also raises policy issues concerning the role of both allocations and the issuance of debt should play in Virginia's road construction program. Contrary to some public comments, this report does not recommend either the abandonment of debt financing or the allocation process. However, the report does recommend that both of these processes need review and that both the board and the department should have guidance on how to incorporate these processes in developing a capital budget and consider their restrictions for future resources to the department. Many of the recommendations in this report will require a significant commitment of resources both in the short and long term. In essence, this is not a short-term solution or a short-term fix. It's going to take you and your folks some time. Also, the General Assembly, Governor, and the Board will need to review and make a number of policy decisions on several recommendations before the staff can begin making changes. Finally, this report points to a number of actions taken by the department before and during the development of this report and indicates that the department had started addressing some of the fundamental issues of the report. This report recognizes these items and gives credit to the department staff for their actions taken. My staff and I would like to thank the department's management and staff for their cooperation and openness during the review. I would now like to introduce Deanne Compton, who is an audit director with our office and was the project manager of this study. Deanne will present the detailed presentation of our report, and at this point, unless there are questions for myself, I'd like to turn the podium over to her. Deanne.
Good afternoon. I would like to begin with the study team. The team consisted of myself, the project in charge, which was Nanette Williams, seven auditors, including Melanie Andrews, Pat Campbell, Zoe Cobb, Kristen Epperson, Chris Lee, Kelly Peters, Patrick Pugh, and our computer support technician, Wendy Baker. Our study originated in February 2002 when the governor requested the Auditor of Public Accounts to perform a performance and operational review of the Department of Transportation. We had eight objectives for the review. The first objective was to determine whether transportation's cash flow analysis and projection procedures are adequate. The second was to determine whether transportation's automated systems can provide the information required for management to make informed financial and operation decisions. The third objective was to document and review all of transportation's funding streams, their uses, restrictions, and other encumbrances, including the Federal Highway Reimbursement Anticipation Notes, the Priority Transportation Fund, and the Transportation Equity Act for the 21st century. Our fourth objective was to determine whether transportation has a process to accumulate, compile, and assess the feasibility of the cost of projects in relation to funding availability before sending out the request for proposal, and if they do, whether the process is adequate. Our fifth objective was to document, review, and determine the adequacy of transportation's policies and procedures to decide which construction and maintenance projects to fund. Our sixth objective was to document, review, and determine the adequacy of transportation's process to commit to construction and maintenance contracts and determine what role funding plays in this process. Our seventh objective was to review and determine the adequacy and propriety of the Commonwealth Transportation Board's role in the contract commitment process and determine what information transportation provides the board members when awarding contracts. Our final objective was to assess the need for legislation to govern transportation's construction and maintenance contract commitment process by requiring a funding commitment before signing a contract. I'd like to provide you with some background that led up to the review. Cash flow issues occurred in 1999 due to a mild winter and passage of the Transportation Equity Act of the 21st century, or T21. Transportation conserved cash by constricting construction project expenses and occasionally operating at a deficit cash balance until revenues began flowing in again. Cash flow issues surfaced again at the end of fiscal year 2001, specifically in the Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund due to gas tax law changes and other factors identified throughout our report. Transportation handled this through interfund borrowing, drastic reductions in construction project expenses, and eventually revising the six-year program, cutting over $3 billion in projects. In summary, we found that transportation's recent cash shortages resulted from a lack of cash and project management and not matching construction projects in the six-year program to available resources. We found that transportation does not have a systematic way to identify its maintenance needs and therefore cannot reasonably determine or quantify those maintenance needs. We also found that compounding these issues is a complex collection of automated systems that do not consistently exchange data and do not provide timely and accurate information to support transportation's management needs. Our report provides background on processes and controls relating to cash and financing sources, allocations, the six-year program, the construction process, the maintenance process, and the systems environment. We provide recommendations on how to improve these processes where necessary, specifically in relation to cash and project management. We provide a best practices model on how to implement our recommendations. We will discuss six major areas during this presentation: cash and financing sources, allocations, the six-year program, systems environment, construction, and maintenance. I begin with cash and financing sources. Revenue forecasting is an important aspect of transportation's planning process. The Department of Motor Vehicles forecasts all motor vehicle-related revenues. The Department of Taxation forecasts the 0.5% sales and use tax dedicated to transportation. And transportation forecasts all other revenues that it collects, including federal revenues. Collections for transportation revenues have exceeded the forecast since 1996, supporting the fact that motor vehicles conservatively underestimates revenues. We found that the closer to the actual date of the forecast, the more accurate the forecast became. In addition, we found that motor vehicles' estimates were as accurate as those prepared for the general fund. In conclusion, we found that motor vehicles' transportation revenue estimates have not negatively impacted transportation's planning process. Transportation receives federal revenues mainly from the Federal Highway Administration under the Federal Aid Highway Program and T21. Transportation has consistently overestimated federal revenues by budgeting for full apportionment authority, which has exceeded obligation authority by approximately 13%. Beginning in fiscal year 2003, transportation plans to budget federal revenues using obligation authority instead of full apportionment. We recommend that transportation should continue to budget federal revenues based on obligation authority and the growth rate of motor fuels consumption, but should also include projected reimbursements to help bring the projection more in line with actual reimbursements. Transportation should document this process and adopt the policy. Now I'd like to discuss federal reimbursement anticipation notes, known as FRANs. Transportation has turned to the issuance of FRANs as a method to provide current resources for construction. However, the issuance of FRANs is only a short-term solution to a long-term problem and can actually make the cash flow situation worse in the future. The next slide shows transportation's plan to issue FRANs through fiscal year 2007. This graph shows projected federal revenues through fiscal year 2008 and the portion of federal revenues transportation will have to spend on debt service for FRANs. If transportation issues debt as described in the previous slide, they will commit approximately 25% of federal revenues to debt service through fiscal year 2010. After that, debt service will taper off each year as transportation continues to make debt service payments through 2017. FRANs require transportation to continue spending on federally approved construction projects so that they can receive federal reimbursement to meet debt service requirements. Transportation will have to commit funding for those projects that receive federal funding and direct state funds to these projects to make up for the federal reimbursements that will go to pay FRAN debt service. Transportation has other forms of debt supported by dedicated revenue streams. For example, Route 58 and Route 28 bonds are supported by local recordation taxes. Other bonds are issued to build toll roads and are supported by the toll revenues. The issue surrounding debt is not whether debt is an appropriate funding mechanism, but rather how much of total revenue should be committed to debt service. Issuing FRANs will increase transportation's total debt service requirements as seen in this slide. By 2006, transportation's annual debt service requirements will exceed $278 million. Out of $3 billion annual budget, transportation will spend over 9% of its budget on debt service. On the other hand, the Commonwealth uses 5% to limit debt service for tax-supported debt. We recommend that transportation should establish a policy on how to decide when and if to issue future FRANs. This policy should consider the amount of any proceeds remaining from previous FRAN issues, the readiness of projects to use the funds, and the impact the issuance has on current and future revenue streams. The General Assembly and the Governor may wish to consider having the Debt Capacity Advisory Committee review and recommend guidelines for transportation to follow when issuing debt. The next area I will discuss is allocations. In order to distribute estimated revenues, transportation begins with a pool of funds consisting of transportation revenues and uses the allocation process to distribute revenues to the various transportation agencies, highway maintenance program, administrative and support functions, highway systems, construction districts, counties, municipalities, and finally, individual highway construction projects. Transportation is statutorily required to fund highway maintenance first and then general and administrative expenses. Once transportation covers these expenses, they must use the remaining funds for road construction. Crossover, which is a term used internally by transportation, occurs when there is not enough designated revenues to fund maintenance needs, and transportation must use construction revenues to fund maintenance costs. This results in reduced revenue available for construction. There are two allocation processes set out in the Code of Virginia to allocate construction revenues. Modal allocations distribute estimated revenues to the various modes of transportation, which include airports, ports, rail, and highways. The formula allocation process distributes the 78.7% allocated for highways in the modal allocation to the three road systems. Primary system receives 40%, the secondary system receives 30%, and the urban system receives 30%. For primary roads, funds are allocated to each of the nine districts based on primary roads by weighted factors of 70% for vehicle miles traveled, 25% for lane miles, and 5% for need. For secondary roads, funds are allocated to each county, 80% for population and 20% for land area. For urban roads, funds are allocated to cities and towns with populations over 3,500 in proportion to their percent of the total population of all eligible cities and towns. Our report does not recommend abandoning the allocation process. We do recommend re-examining the allocation process, and we discuss this recommendation later in relation to the six-year program. Now I'll discuss the six-year program and our recommendations related to it. Transportation annually prepares, updates, and publishes the six-year program. The program is Transportation's efforts to program highway construction projects. In our review of the six-year program and the processes surrounding it, we found two basic issues. Transportation has not considered cash flow projections when developing the six-year program, and Transportation has never attempted to match project allocations and estimated project cash payouts. We recommend that Transportation's programming division should incorporate estimated monthly project payouts and estimated monthly cash flow information into the project allocation process. This would allow the programming and scheduling division to match project allocations to a project's cash needs and would mitigate the cash drain that the mismatch of cash and allocations has on Transportation's cash account. We found that there is no relationship between the allocation of revenues, the timing of cash inflows, and the budgeting of construction payouts. Because projects are long-lived and will not spend their allocation within 1 year, but instead over several years, Transportation has not attempted to match allocations to expenses on an annual basis. Once authorized and awarded, a project spends funds at its own rate without regard for its allocation. In many cases, total project costs will not equal total allocations because Transportation does not budget or restrict projects to planned expenses each year. They do not properly estimate project costs and do not provide allocations equal to 100% of a project's cost by completion. We recommend that Transportation must carefully monitor and link the timing of cash receipts and expenses to all projects currently authorized. This may result in increased cash balances as Transportation matches their current and anticipated road construction expenses to forecasted cash. To accomplish this, they will need to budget for construction projects. In addition, Transportation should begin the systematic process of budgeting for the construction program. The budget should consider anticipated contract payout against anticipated cash flow. Transportation's six-year program should be a six-year capital budget. This process will be central to Transportation's success in developing a deliverable, financially constrained construction program based on statewide needs and priorities. We found several issues relating to the six-year program implementation. The board approved inclusions of projects in the six-year program with little or no allocations and advanced those projects to advertisement and award. Many of the decisions to start or add projects appear to have been motivated more by a project's popularity or the desire to begin as many projects as possible. Abandonment of the 70% rule resulted in Transportation having no methodology for determining when to advertise and award construction contracts. The 70% rule is a method developed by Transportation for determining when to advertise and begin construction projects based on allocations. When applying this rule, Transportation would advertise a project when the project had received allocations equal to 70% or more of its estimated project cost. Transportation used the 70% rule to help manage funding, and it appeared effective as long as cash flow was sufficient. Transportation does not have a policy or reliable process to fully fund projects by year of completion. We recommend that Transportation must develop a financially constrained six-year program based on anticipated project payouts. To do this, they should develop a method to ensure that the projects added to the six-year program have sufficient allocations to complete planned work each year and that the full cost of the project has been allocated to it by the year of project completion. The method should allocate revenues to projects based on expected project payouts each year and should be reconciled to anticipated cash flow. Transportation should only add new projects to the extent that there is sufficient cash to pay for them. When developing the six-year program, they should begin with a district's, county's, or municipality's allocation, remove any outstanding debt service, and subtract anticipated existing project payouts. Transportation can use the remaining funds, if any, to add new projects as long as project payouts do not exceed cash inflows. What we are proposing for transportation is very similar to what the Governor and the General Assembly do when preparing the Commonwealth's budget. This process would make the six-year program a cash-based budget. During development and implementation of the new process, transportation should determine an appropriate minimum cash balance to maintain as a reserve. The cash reserve is necessary for economic downturns when revenues are less than anticipated, as well as to provide a cushion for transportation while they work to develop and refine new processes. The General Assembly may wish to create a transportation revenue reserve fund that would act like a rainy day fund for the Transportation Trust Fund. Additionally, the General Assembly may wish to restrict availability of these funds for other uses. We found two issues relating to the six-year program monitoring. We found that transportation does not monitor the progress of the projects in the six-year program. In addition, transportation does not report on the progress and success or failure of the six-year program to anyone, resulting in them not being held accountable for the results. We recommend that the Governor and the General Assembly may wish to consider amending the Code of Virginia to require transportation to report on the progress and success or failure of the six-year program to the Transportation and Finance Committees annually. We reviewed transportation's project cost estimates and found that transportation's estimates contained in the six-year program understate the true cost of the program. Initial project cost estimates are the most inaccurate but the most crucial because they are the basis for initial funding decisions and initial project allocations. Estimates become more accurate as the design and planning progress. We found several reasons for the inaccurate estimates. We found inconsistencies in sources, in the preparation process, and contingency inclusion. There was a lack of preliminary site work and project specifications. In addition, the six-year program development and approval process led to it. The six-year program process contributes to low project estimates because transportation cannot perform preliminary site work or spend any funds on a project before placement of the project in the six-year program. However, because a project must have an estimate before going in the program, transportation must prepare the estimate with the barest of information. In addition, there has been an inherent incentive over the past several years to keep the project cost estimates low in order to add as many new projects as possible each year. We recommend that transportation complete basic preliminary engineering work, such as scoping, soil tests, environmental permitting, and surveys prior to approving projects and placing projects in the six-year program. We concur with the former Governor's Commission on Transportation Policy's recommendation that transportation should create a mechanism for funding scoping work on projects before board approval for inclusion in the program. However, we do not recommend the creation of a separate fund receiving separate appropriations. We believe the creation of a cost center or a budgetary pool of funds would be the most practical choice. Preliminary work before project approval would allow for more realistic initial project estimates, and the board would benefit by having more information available for decision-making purposes. Prior to authorization, transportation could eliminate projects that are not feasible or whose estimated costs are too high to be practical. We concur with Transportation's own Research Council recommendation that transportation should develop and employ a more rigorous cost estimation process and allocate more resources to the development of cost estimates during the planning process, thereby yielding more refined and more accurate project concepts. We believe transportation has taken a step in the right direction with the formation of the group to study cost estimates. We strongly urge transportation to closely monitor their progress and ensure the development and application of a reasonable, realistic, and consistent cost estimation method. We reviewed the Commonwealth Transportation Board and its role in the six-year program. There are 16 legally required duties, including the following: the determination of location of routes, approval of all construction contracts, coordinating the planning for financing of transportation needs, administration, distribution, and allocation of funds in the Transportation Trust Fund as provided by law, and approval of all maintenance contracts equal to or greater than $250,000. In addition to the 16 duties of the board, the General Assembly has established statutory responsibilities relating to project prioritization. The board should recommend objective criteria to use in selecting transportation projects to be advanced from the feasibility to the construction stage. The board should develop and update a statewide transportation plan covering a 20-year planning horizon in accordance with federal transportation planning requirements. The Code of Virginia states that it is the intent of the General Assembly that this plan, the statewide transportation plan, assess transportation needs and assign priorities to projects on a statewide basis, avoiding the production of a plan which is an aggregation of local, district, or modal plans. Transportation does not have policies or procedures to address this request from the General Assembly. The board should immediately establish and implement objective criteria for construction project selection and prioritization. Both the Transportation Research Council and the former Governor's Commission on Transportation Policy have recommended project selection and prioritization criteria. The General Assembly may wish to re-examine the use of allocations for setting construction project priorities and funding. While the General Assembly has established that the board must establish a method for setting statewide priorities, the General Assembly may wish to provide them some guidance on factors that the board should consider in establishing this process. Transportation may not be able to achieve a program based on statewide needs and priorities using the current method for project allocation to districts, counties, and cities and towns. The General Assembly may wish to amend the Code of Virginia to change the current allocation system so that transportation can truly base their priorities and criteria on statewide needs rather than by district, county, and city. The focus of the six-year program should remain on the statewide needs of the Commonwealth as a whole. It should not focus on districts. The current process of presenting individual districts' tentative plans to the board members from those districts distracts from the statewide focus and instead encourages the district focus. Transportation and the board should focus on statewide needs as is statutorily required of the board when reviewing and approving the six-year program. Transportation and the board should change their presentation and review process. We found that there is no one held accountable for the six-year program. By prioritizing statewide transportation needs, designating projects for inclusion in the program, and approving the six-year program, the board commits a considerable amount of Commonwealth resources for transportation programs. Without significant improvements in cash and project management, the board runs the risk of improperly committing the Commonwealth's resources in the future. Since the actions of the board significantly commit the resources of the Commonwealth, the General Assembly may wish to extend to the board the provisions of the Appropriation Act, which clearly states the responsibilities of anyone who intentionally incurs a deficit or obligates the Commonwealth to the point that it will incur a deficit. We found that there are several practices that the board performs that are not statutorily required. The first one is reviewing all project designs and approving them, which adds 30 to 60 days to each project, even though the board does not have the technical expertise to review the designs. In addition, the board approves all professional service contracts, which delays projects another 30 to 60 days. We concur with the Governor's Commission on Transportation Policy recommendation that the CTV should discontinue the practice of reviewing and approving design plans. The board should also discontinue the practice of reviewing and approving professional service contracts. I will now discuss the systems environment and its effects on transportation's processes. Most systems within transportation meet the individual needs and requirements of a division, while at the same time, most of these systems cannot exchange or share basic information. Contributing to this data exchange issue are the multiple operating platforms, systems, and program configurations and networks that have evolved at transportation. There is no common understanding of what basic information is necessary to operate the entire department and who has responsibility to gather and maintain this information. Transportation has recognized that its ultimate goal is the need to create and address an enterprise-wide system approach. Transportation has created a data warehouse as an interim solution to satisfy the department's current needs, since implementation of an enterprise system will be lengthy and expensive. If the data warehouse is to provide a sound interim solution, management must, for each system, assign and hold accountable the division responsible for gathering and maintaining information. Without this accountability, inaccurate, untimely, and inconsistent information will very quickly compromise the usefulness of the data warehouse. in the interim period to provide the information necessary for improving and maintaining cash management information, transportation should include the following systems in the data warehouse: program project management system, the right-of-way and utilities management system, transport, the financial management system, the six-year improvement plan database, the secondary six-year plan database, and the cash forecasting database. Transportation should identify all of the critical data elements in the systems necessary for project and cash management. After identification, they should implement a program of data integrity to ensure that the critical elements undergo update in all systems as needed. This program of data integrity should especially address those individuals that extract information from a system and use the data independently of the system. Transportation should review the manual processes, such as transferring information from the six-year improvement plan database, and consider developing an automated interface to update and exchange this information with other systems. Transportation needs to establish policies regarding utilization of critical systems to ensure accuracy and completeness of source system data. The policies should address usage and update requirements. Transportation should establish data standards and use these standards as the basis for future systems development. This will facilitate the transfer of information between systems. In the recent past, system users could make informal requests for new systems or changes to existing systems outside of transportation's organization-wide development and implementation plan, resulting in many systems in use that do not communicate. To address this problem, transportation has developed a plan to be able to evaluate both its current and proposed investments in systems development and maintenance, and to weigh them to determine the best fit to strategic needs and business improvement priorities. We recommend that transportation should develop a department-wide information technology plan that focuses on what transportation needs to accomplish its mission. They should evaluate all system development requests against this plan and should only approve and fund systems and system changes that support their mission. Transportation should implement a development and maintenance plan that addresses how transportation will handle system and information needs before implementing an enterprise system. Management should strictly enforce this policy by defining system development versus system maintenance projects and the procedures for each area. Transportation, after addressing its interim needs, should complete its work on developing a systematic approach to addressing its enterprise information and system needs. I will now discuss the processes and issues surrounding road construction from conception to completion. Transportation's current culture and business practices do not support the processes to provide accurate project estimates, adequate quality assurance programs, continuous communications and coordination of information between all necessary divisions, and clear accountability for construction projects. The construction process starts with the plan design, and we found design quality issues. Plan errors and omissions are the primary reason why construction costs exceed budgets. Design quality suffers due to quantity estimating errors, a high demand for plans, low staffing levels and expertise, communication gaps between disciplines, and outdated plans. Location and design has a quality control process but does not follow it to the extent that they must to ensure quality designs. The culture of transportation is for each division to assert control over their phase of the construction life cycle, including preliminary engineering, right-of-way, and construction. Then they complete the phase and turn the information over so that the next phase can be performed by another division instead of working as a team. Location and design manages a project during preliminary engineering, including right-of-way, and the construction division manages it through completion. The current project management process is compartmentalized, and control, authority, and responsibility only exist within the individual divisions. The movement toward cradle-to-grave project management, in which an individual or group of individuals is responsible for the success or failure of a project, will establish accountability and ultimately result in a more successful project, which results in a quality product built on time and on budget. Transportation has initiated concurrent engineering, which promotes performing activities at the same time within design disciplines, beginning their work as soon as input information is available. However, this process only covers preliminary engineering and right-of-way phases. A handoff of the project still occurs when the project goes to construction, and a communication gap continues to exist between the involved divisions. Transportation should increase its efforts to implement the concurrent engineering process, develop ways in which to measure the impact of the process, and identify accountable parties. They should also create a formal constructability process to help reduce design errors and emissions. Transportation should develop an aggressive plan to implement cradle-to-grave project management in an effort to establish accountability for and improve the quality of the entire construction process. This plan could involve single individuals as project managers, project management teams, or a combination of the two. Transportation should clearly define responsibilities and give the appropriate authority to the responsible individual. These recommendations become very important in implementing the changes to the six-year program development and implementation. We'll bring all this together when discussing our best practices. Next, I'd like to discuss maintenance. Transportation does not have a zero-based budgeting process for maintenance. Transportation develops the maintenance budget based on historical allocations and additional needs. They do not have an objective method to determine maintenance needs and timing of those needs for individual specific assets and types of assets. Area headquarters personnel perform an individual assessment of area maintenance needs based on a visual inspection of the roadway surfaces, structures, and drainage items. Since there is no systematic way for transportation to identify the maintenance needs, it is difficult to determine whether the maintenance program is truly underfunded or overfunded. The maintenance budget is not a needs-based process. Therefore, transportation cannot accurately state that their needs are causing crossover. Crossover is the point at which maintenance will take dollars out of construction. Historically, maintenance in general and administrative expenses receive funding first, and any excess revenues are transferred to construction. However, transportation anticipates that crossover of $147 million will occur in fiscal year 2003 and continues through fiscal year 2008, approaching a total of $900 million for the six-year period. We recommend that transportation should implement an objective means of identifying and prioritizing maintenance needs, namely an asset management approach. Transportation should use an automated system to record data and should prioritize needs based on an objective set of criteria. Transportation should implement asset management to determine the true maintenance needs of the Commonwealth's roads and the relative cost and determine whether crossover actually exists and to what extent. Then they should determine how to handle crossover in the future, whether it be by obtaining additional funding or maintaining assets at a lower service level. Next, we found some additional facts about the maintenance program and the processes surrounding it. Maintenance work is cyclical, primarily occurring during the summer months. Maintenance supporting revenues do not flow in the same pattern as the maintenance activities. The maintenance division does not match the timing of cash inflows and expenses throughout the year. The maintenance division does closely monitor its budget and expenses. However, it lacks cash management tools. Transportation has no formal project management over maintenance activities. Maintenance managers and engineers stay involved with projects and track expenses for those projects. However, there are no formal guidelines to follow in doing so. There is no one person or project manager to see an entire project through to the end. Transportation does not have a documented plan in place for implementing project management over maintenance projects. The maintenance division needs to consider cash flows when scheduling maintenance work and entering into maintenance contracts. The maintenance division should work with financial planning to monitor cash and expense cycles. Transportation should implement a formal project management plan over maintenance activities, which would include cash management techniques. This could help alleviate the maintenance program's cash shortfalls. To help make our report more useful, we have incorporated the recommendations made throughout the report into a best practices model. This model puts the recommendations into perspective and demonstrates how to implement them. We believe transportation's implementation of these recommendations would enable transportation to better control and manage its cash flow, to use its limited resources more effectively, and to accomplish its primary mission of building and maintaining roads. Implementation of these recommendations will require substantial time and effort, as well as the cooperation of the board, the General Assembly, the governor, and other state agencies and institutions. The best practice model begins with the six-year program development. The board must have an objective process to balance resources against needs and desires, which begins with the five-year needs assessment. This is a comprehensive review of the statewide construction needs of all highway systems. From the five-year needs assessment, the board should develop a 20-year plan that is a financially constrained, prioritized list of projects containing estimated project costs. Transportation is required to update the plan as needed, but at least every 5 years. The five-year needs assessment satisfies this requirement. The 20-year plan should be the foundation for transportation planning and for the six-year program. Transportation should begin scoping and project design before project placement in the six-year program to allow the board to determine project feasibility and provide a more realistic project estimate. Transportation should assign project management teams at the initial scoping and design of a project. Transportation must determine its revenue streams before developing the six-year program so that it can predict cash inflows and budget accordingly. Before issuing debt, such as the FRANS, transportation should consider the impact that the issuance will have on current and future revenue streams and cash flows. Transportation should carefully monitor and link the timing of cash receipts and payouts to all projects currently authorized. For each update cycle of the program, transportation should update realistic cost and time estimates and estimate cash payouts for existing projects in the six-year program. Transportation should start with the allocated revenue, remove any debt service costs, subtract existing project payouts, and then add new projects as long as project payouts do not exceed cash inflows. Once the six-year program goes through the public allocation hearing process, the board can finalize and approve the six-year program. Mm-hmm. Transportation, and more specifically the board, should be accountable for achieving the six-year program and reporting its achievements and failures. The next phase of the best practices model is implementation of the six-year program. Project management should continue throughout implementation of the program. Part of the project team's responsibilities is assisting transportation and implementing a successful design review program that holds designers accountable for poor design quality and costly errors. Transportation should continue implementation of concurrent engineering to aid in the acquisition of right-of-way and utility relocation as early in the process as feasible. Before approving the advertisement schedule, transportation should update the cash forecasting model to determine if cash is available to support the schedule. During the construction phase of our model, project management is the key to accountability. Transportation must hold an individual, group, or team accountable for delivering projects on time and on budget. Transportation should clearly define roles and responsibilities, establish accountability, delegate necessary authority, and open critical lines of communication so that information flows from conception to completion of all projects. Transportation must develop and monitor construction project budgets. They must consider funding availability and the impact any project changes has on funding. The next phase in our model is maintenance. Transportation should make the implementation of asset management a priority. Transportation should continue its efforts toward this goal and should recognize that there is no way to appropriately fund its maintenance needs without an asset management system to provide sound data and decision-making tools. To implement asset management, transportation must collect a complete inventory of its road systems, perform a condition assessment on these assets, and then identify its true maintenance needs on a statewide level. Transportation should prioritize the identified needs based on a set of objective criteria that includes but is not limited to safety, mandates, life cycle costs, return on investment, level of service, and user priorities. Transportation should develop its maintenance budget based on the prioritized needs and available revenues. Transportation should take into consideration the changing spending patterns of the maintenance program and the pattern of incoming revenues to help prevent cash shortfalls. As with the construction process and the six-year program, transportation needs project management to establish accountability for contract and project management in this area. The final aspect of our best practices model is the systems environment. To make decisions properly, transportation needs timely and accurate information. Transportation must have systems that can interact and exchange information. Data should be reliable and data fields designed for compatibility. Systems should be user-friendly and provide management with timely, accurate, easily available management reports. Transportation has begun implementation of a data warehouse as an interim solution. However, the best practice is ultimately an enterprise solution. That concludes our presentation, and I can answer any questions at this time.
Any questions?
I think she did a wonderful job, and I'm still amazed that she could do that without having a drink of cold water. My throat got to be dry.
Thank you very much. You now see why we got y'all sworn in before this report. The good news is, and it is a great report. Walter, thank you very much, you and your staff, and your own presentation. Very, very helpful. The good news is that our new commissioner is very much on top of this, and his leadership team, they are implementing how many of the recommendations are 35 out of the 50
we'd started on
that relate to the administration within VDOT. And this, of course, will be a continuing process for VDOT and for us. Any further items on this? Any further discussion on this point on the agenda?
One quick one. Are we going to have regular updates on the progress of how this is coming along?
Mm-hmm. You most definitely will. We want to give them a little time to continue to digest this, and they will get back with us on it.
Mr. Secretary, if I might add, we made a commitment that within 30 days, so I guess we've got about 20 days on the clock left, we will have an action plan for all of the recommendations that affect VDOT, and we'll be able to report back to you the direction we're taking to meet those specific recommendations.
We are actually in pretty good, excuse me, Jerry. Well,
thank you. That's terrific, and I would hope that we'd hear regularly. How about the recommendations directed towards the board itself? What's the process for dealing with those?
The ones that, Philip and I were talking about this, the ones that do not affect directly the administration of VDOT, we're going to extract from these recommendations, and the report sort of done that already for us, those that the CTB can act on itself, separate from those that are going to require General Assembly action. And we're going to have to make decisions about which recommendations we think that we need to move forward on, and which are going to require cooperation from the legislature. But that will be also part of that ongoing process. Yeah, Kenny?
This is a very good report. On the board recommendations, most of them revolve around establishing the needs and the criteria for projects. And I think, as we have talked before, that is the major failing that we have in our process here. So I would hope that we would spend the attendant amount of time and effort bringing that into reality.
We will, maybe we need to put that on a workshop agenda the next month or the month after that.
Well, it specifically mentions two reports on that, and we could let them have the information ahead of time and then do a workshop.
Right. Okay. We're in pretty good shape on our time. We can keep proceeding, or we can take a 10-minute break. We've got two other items. What's the wish? Everybody doing all right? Okay, we'll go into the next portion, which is, again, Barbara Reese on an overview of the upcoming bond sales.
You'll be grateful to know there is no PowerPoint presentation with this. If you look in the notebook that I handed out to you earlier, in the back tab will be a brief presentation called Plan Fall 2002 Debt Issues. In that financial overview, right, the comprehensive financial overview. And you could imagine how thrilled I am to be standing here after the auditor of public accounts told me selling debt is not a good thing. But with that said, I do want to give over a brief overview of some of the planned fall debt issues that we're looking at. On behalf of the Commonwealth Transportation Board, VDOT is planning the sale of approximately $581 million in new debt and an $87 million debt refinancing this fall. The planned new debt sales in the fall are France at $496 million, the Northern Virginia Transportation Program about $49 million, and the Route 28 Corridor Improvement District about $36 million in debt. In addition, because the market conditions are incredibly favorable at this point, we will be refinancing, and it's just like refinancing your existing mortgage, the outstanding about $87 million in Route 28 Corridor Improvement District bonds. Reasons for doing this fall is to maintain a positive cash flow. As you just heard, the Auditor of Public Accounts report and our own report, our cash needs here are tight, and we do need the cash that the Frans provide to keep moving projects forward and to meet ongoing obligations that have been here not just in the last month but for years. And we need to complete those debt sales by no later than November 1st, 2002, and our goal date right now is October 1st. So in order to meet that time frame, next month at your next board meeting, there will be resolutions authorizing the sales, and the form of the documents will be presented to you for your consideration and pending approval. And once you take action, then the debt sales will be presented to the State Treasury Board and the Governor for their required approval. And just so you know, on the top of page 3, issuing debt is not a simple process, and there are a whole host of entities that are involved, and I just wanted to list those out for you. There are VDOT staff, including myself, the Department of Treasury, the Attorney General's Office. Rick Walton works with us on these sales. The CTB does, in the code, have the authority to hire bond counsel and financial advisors. Your financial advisors are Public Resources Advisory Group, or PRAG, which are they're located at...
That was wonderful. Wrong number.
She wanted to know if it was payroll, which I thought was appropriate.
Chuck Scheimer, or Charles Scheimer, who's with Troutman Sanders, who is the CTB's bond counsel, and then there's a whole series of underwriters and trustees that we work with. Turning to page 4, and these are just very brief summary overviews of each of the sales. First one I'm going to go over is Frans. We do plan to issue $496 million in Frans this fall. First, there's $317 million. As I mentioned to you earlier, the Appropriation Act diverted $317 million in sales and use tax revenue from the Highway Construction Fund to the General Fund in February to address the General Fund's cash flow needs. And we have to sell Frans to basically recover that money and allow it to go through to the primary, secondary, and urban systems. And then there's about another $179 million that will be used to provide cash for ongoing transportation projects. And if you look at that right now, that's about $145 million for highway construction projects and another $34 million for transit projects. A key point on the $179 million in Frans, that is a cash flow tool. I mean, this is taking individual projects and laying out the cash flow and all the different funding sources you have for individual projects and saying, okay, when is it that I need that money in order to pay my bills? Cash flow, as well as the low interest rates. If you noticed in the auditor's presentation, they showed a slide that had all the various planned sales of Frans over the next 6 years. Next year, I think there's one over $200 million or so. But we are looking with PRAG, who's your financial advisor, looking at, would we increase the size of this year's sale because interest rates are so favorable and we know we can spend the money within the limitations that are put on spending debt. So do we increase that size this year because the interest rates make it so beneficial to do so instead of selling debt again next year? So we are going through that analysis right now. Just as a reminder, I told you earlier that we are allowed to have outstanding at any one time $1.2 billion in Frans. $375 million in Frans were sold in the fall of 2000, and those will all be expended by December of 2002. This board has the authority to determine the terms and structure of a Frans sale, and it is subject to the approval of the Treasury Board and the Governor. how the FRANs are secured. If you went and read an official statement, I don't know how many of you have ever done that on a bond sale, it says how we're going to pay that back. Basically, when I talked about earlier, we receive federal reimbursements back. We don't get a grant. We get reimbursed every time up until I have enough to make my next the next debt service payment. All that reimbursement comes back and goes into a debt service account for the FRAN payment. That is how they work. That is the structure that was included in T21 when FRANs were first, which are known Garveys. Nationally, they're known as Garveys. And additionally, the CTB, if you decided or you felt that there needed to be additional money put into that debt service account, you have the authority to do so, as the General Assembly can take that action at any time it so chooses as well. Turning to page 6, the Northern Virginia Transportation District Program. This is a long-established debt program here in the Commonwealth. We do plan to sell $49.2 million in bonds this fall for that program. You can see at the top of page 6 the individual projects that will benefit from that debt sale, and these are again to match their cash flow needs for those of you from Northern Virginia. I'm sure there's many projects here near and dear to your heart. Chapter 799 of the 2000 General Assembly did increase the overall size of the Northern Virginia Transportation Debt Program from $471 million to $500.2 million. And the revenues that pay the debt service on the Northern Virginia Transportation Program come from a whole variety of sources. The first biggest part is recordation fees collected in those localities: Alexandria, Fairfax, Falls Church, Manassas, Manassas Park, Arlington County, Fairfax County, and Loudoun and Prince William. Right-of-way use fees that are appropriated for that purpose by the General Assembly, and then any other revenues that may be deposited or appropriated by the General Assembly. To give you a sense of context, so you don't feel like, well, this is the first time we're going out and issuing all this debt, this is the sixth issue that there's been for the Northern Virginia Transportation District Program. It's not the first. There is a seventh sale already. When we do our cash forecasting and outlook of what we're going to need, there is another $75 million issue planned sometime next year, and it will provide funding, and you can see those projects listed in the middle of page 7. And that what will remain then is $22.1 million in a debt authority. We can sell that much debt, but right now there is not a planned use for that. And then the last item, and I'm sort of disappointed that Hobie Mitchell isn't here, because I certainly talked to him enough about this program and I could share some good news with him. Route 28 Corridor Improvement District, again, this is a Northern Virginia debt program that's been on the books since, I believe, 1988. We have about $87 million in bonds that we had already sold in the late 80s, and they are going to be basically what's called refunded or refinanced this fall, because we do have such favorable market conditions. And what the end result of that is, it's just like your house payment, it lowers our debt service payment. There was legislation acted in 1988 that said we could sell up to about $161 million in debt for the Route 28 Corridor Improvement District. That is financed with a special assessment tax that is placed on businesses in that district. It's a defined geographical area in each of those two localities. And that revenue that special assessments tax, and it's up to 20 cents per $100, is what is used to pay the debt service on these bonds. There's a number of agreements and contracts that have to be signed between the district, the localities, and VDOT, and the CTB related to this debt sale. So I'm giving you a heads up on that. And then there is the Public-Private Transportation Act. For the last, I think, 2 years or so, there have been work underway to negotiate a contract with the Route 28 Corridor Improvements LLC between VDOT and that group to construct 6 interchanges and other improvements, which is sort of phase 2 of the whole corridor improvement program. And Fairfax and Loudoun counties are part of those negotiations, and I'm happy to report that unless something drastic happens in the next few days, it looks like we do finally have a deal on that. It's been a long time coming. And so we will be issuing the additional $36 million in authorized debt that we can sell on behalf of Route 28 to move that project forward. It will be going to the Loudoun County Board on Monday, if we can get all the documents put together, all the lawyers can get all the documents done, and once it goes to the Loudoun and Fairfax County Board and they approve the deal, then it will come to you as part of the Route 28 debt sale this fall. Those documents are right now on track to be done and everything signed and ready for your meeting in August. So keep your fingers crossed and that will be done, and that will make a lot of people in Northern Virginia happy to address congestion there. And that's the end.
Any questions, Barbara? Okay. Thank you, Barbara. Very good. Thank you for that. The last item on the agenda today is the VDOT commissioner on his reorganization of that agency.
Thank you again. This is a long one-slide presentation. VDOT began a reorganization back in June, late May, actually, and completed the first phase of it July 1, and that was the reorganization of the commissioner staff. I'd like to preface the statement by saying that this is not a reorganization like a Yahtzee game where you put the same number of dice in a little kit and roll them out each time and they just look differently. This is a meaningful reorganization of the department to, in part, address many of the same items that you heard in the Auditor of Public Accounts report regarding accountability. Accountability begins with clarity of purpose and mission. Without going through a long dissertation on how the department was previously organized, simply because it's no longer relevant, I'd like to just review with you how we are currently reorganized at the commissioner's level and make a comment, just a comment or two, not all issues, but a comment or two about how this reorganization is changing some of the ways we do our business. Greg Worley left the room. We're retaining the Inspector General as an independent arm to the department, Mr. Greg Worley, who worked very closely with the Walt Kucharski during the preparation of their audit. Greg does all of our internal audits and investigations and has a fine professional staff. The Director of Public Affairs, Linda South, previously was embedded in underneath one of what was then the assistant commissioners. We've pulled her out to report directly to the commissioner simply because communications is a vital ingredient of everything we do and is not related to just one specific branch. Claude Garver, Claude, stand up please, is the deputy commissioner. Claude has spent his career in VDOT and brings to us a tremendous wealth of historical knowledge and institutional knowledge with the ability to do things differently. And you don't run across that very often. Claude is going to serve as a true deputy and does not have any other areas reporting to him so that he can indeed act as a true deputy. I'm going to get back to the District Administrators Council in just a moment. But I'd like for each one of these folks that are here to stand up. Jeff, why don't you come up front? Director of Planning and Environment, Jeff Southern. The Chief Engineer for Program Development is in Spain, but Mr. Malcolm Curley took that position in July 1. Chief of Operations, Frank G. Director of Policy and Organizational Development, Connie Sorrell. Our interim Chief Financial Officer, Barbara Reese, who you've seen a couple times already today, and a Director of Technology, Research, and Innovation, Dr. Gary Allen. These are fine folks, or they wouldn't be here. I can tell you that straight on. The fact that most of them have spent their careers here, frankly, is nice, but isn't important to me. What's important to me is that they have the ability and the will to move forward in a very business-like fashion with the administration of the Virginia Department of Transportation. That's why they are on the staff at the level they are on. If some of you that have been here before notice we always talked about assistant commissioners, you don't see that word here. I don't need any assistants. I don't need any helpers. I need doers. The title assistant may have application in other areas, but for my staff, it doesn't. It sends a message, number one, that these individuals are strictly accountable for directing the efforts of the department that they report to. We have 10,300 people in round numbers in VDOT. 10 of them report to me. It means 10,290 report to them. So in that regard, their positions are at very high levels of standard performance and accountability. The planning directorate, just to help you a little bit as you get familiar with VDOT, is the place where we do everything up to the point of deciding whether something ends up as a build or no build decision. So they do all the early planning, work with the MPOs like in Hampton Roads, here in Richmond and Northern Virginia. But it also includes the Environmental Division and the NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act process, or writing EISs, things that generate a lot of controversy, but documents that are written for the purpose of reaching a conclusion on whether you are going to build something or you aren't going to build it. So in terms of clear accountability and talking about trade-offs and cradle-to-grave project management, the planning, the director of planning and environment will manage all of the different divisions that perform the functions from the early planning, 20-year long-range planning, up to the point of completing an EIS and bringing a project forward with a build or no build. Well, to bring a project forward, it has to have a build recommendation. That's a change from the way we were before. The chief engineer for program development, Mr. Curley, will be accountable once a project is handed off to him. He will be accountable for all of the engineering work, all the right-of-way work, and a change, all of the work required to bring that project through construction advertisement. That's a change in the way we did business before. So he'll take care of developing all the preliminary plans, everything associated with engineering, everything associated with right-of-way plans and acquisition, up through contract award. Now, when we get through contract award, now we're not developing or doing engineering anymore. We're building things. Frank G., as chief of operations, is accountable for building, operating, if that's appropriate, and maintaining. Those are all the functions that will be rolled up under operations. The district administrators, also the 9 district administrators, also report to Frank, and again, we'll come back to that at the end here. In policy and organizational development, previously we called that administration. Administration is an awful broad word. Every division we have does some administration. What we really have asked Connie Sorrell to focus on are all of the things associated with policy analysis and development, legislative analysis and development at the state and federal level, human resources, which is obviously a very key function. One of the major changes we've made here is that we're going to establish a VDOT Learning Center, and the goal behind that is not the traditional organizational development things that human resource departments do, but a true institute for learning. In the maintenance area, in the program management area, in the project management area, something that eventually not only will people be required to go through in VDOT, but that we want people to compete to be able to go through, again, not just in VDOT, but from the private sector as well. Our consultant project managers, project engineers from contractor companies, so that we have consistent methods of applying policies and resources across everything we do. The chief financial officer, I wrestled a long time with what to call that person. coming out of the private sector most recently. CFO fits it better than anything I can think of. You know, we're going to get $3.4 billion this year. We're going to spend $3.4 billion. That's a business. That's a big business. And we need a CFO, and we need someone who understands that that is the title of the expectations we have of them. And we are really fortunate that that Barbara was willing to give up her position at Senate Finance to fill this role in an interim position. We've advertised that job. I think those job advertisements closed on Tuesday, and we will be interviewing. Barbara did apply. We will be interviewing and selecting the most qualified candidate for that position. The Director of Technology Research and Innovation, the change there is that we consolidated the IT functions with research and innovation. Those have been broken out under a directorate or a previous assistant commissioner on their own. I certainly support the need for us to have cutting-edge resources in terms of information technology, but I also have a real desire to make sure that we're implementing new ideas and that we aren't just doing technological studies for the sake of doing studies. It's very important that research tie those things together, and Dr. Allen, who runs our research institute in Charlottesville, has been kind enough to agree without much arm twisting at all to take that role. Another thing you'll find out, and we'll do a presentation for you sometime in the future, Mr. Secretary, is on our Transportation Research Council. We've got a nationally renowned center, have had for a good number of years there in Charlottesville, and you should know more about it. Coming back to the district administrators for just a moment. You know, the district administrators are nine business unit presidents. If we're a major corporation, they're nine business unit presidents. Our public that we serve and that pays us interacts with the districts a lot more than they interact with us. As I mentioned, we have 10,300 employees. About 1,000 of them are here. That means 9,300 are somewhere else. They're out in the districts. We maintain about 60,000 miles of road. It's not all here in Richmond. They're out in the districts. We have formed a district administrators council who annually elects a chair and a vice chair, and we have placed the chair of that council as a member of the commissioner's staff. Even though they report to the chief of operations, it's kind of a little transitionary time for us here, we have included that person on our staff. District administrators weren't represented at the commissioner's staff meeting. That seems less than smart to me. We've corrected that. They participate on a weekly basis. And in addition, as part of this reorganization, what we're working on now are the distribution of some authority that has very traditionally and historically been held in Richmond out to our district administrators. We're going to do that in a manner that's organized. We're going to do that in a fashion that if training is required for certain individuals, we make sure we put some systems and processes in place so we don't drive anybody to failure. But the time is here. We're 96 years old as an agency. The time is here to let the district administrators be accountable for the management of their resources. One area that I'll mention just quickly that we're doing as one of the first steps of implementation is in the planning area. Mr. Southard is in the process of talking with the planning divisions as well as the planning staffs in the districts to begin a transition of the day-to-day planning function. Instead of Richmond sending people out to the rest of the Commonwealth, people will be accountable for those functions from the districts, which will free up our central resources to do some of the broader, more longer range, truly transportation planning functions that we should be doing. We have tremendous resources and talent here in the central office, And as we move some of this other, these other functions out into the districts, we'll free up those resources here to perform much far-reaching levels of analysis. In planning, for instance, it comes as a surprise to some, we should not always just be analyzing whether or not we're going to build a highway. We need to be looking at transit. We need to be looking at new emerging technologies and making sure that the resources we have are planning transportation improvements in the broadest sense of the word. This is going to give us a chance to do that.
Mr. Chiquette,
yes,
just
sir.
One clarification. Your district administrators program, are they going to elect one amongst themselves to be a part of that? They're going to do that? Now, these, so I'm clear on that, this would be like the chief engineers of these nine districts?
Not really, Mr. Bailey. Ambrose, mm-hmm. The district council, it gets come. I don't like meetings with a lot of people. Nothing against this meeting. Sure. Nothing against this meeting. But staff meetings and meetings where you're talking and need to make decisions, to get a staff of 10 and 9 district administrators in the room, yeah, gets a little bit cumbersome. The district administrators have been put together as a council with a charter. They've elected from among themselves a chair and a vice chair. That election or designation of that purpose of that person doesn't change their duties as a district administrator. It just means that person will be the sounding voice for all of the district administrators at our weekly staff meeting and at some other functions as well. We're planning a staff retreat to talk about some of these distributing authority down to the districts. That person, actually the chair and vice chair both, will attend in that case. The chair this year is Mr. Tom Farley from the Northern District, Northern Virginia District, and the vice chair is Fred Altizer, okay, from Salem.
Okay.
But we are very actively, I meet every other month with the district administrators, mm-hmm, at a dinner. We are making a real shift here, mm-hmm, in the way we've traditionally done business, and a shift that I think will serve us well as the conference.
That weekly meeting, will that always be in person, or will that be by teleconference sometimes?
The weekly meeting is a staff meeting in our conference room on the third floor. Tom Farley is free to drive to it. He's free to tune in by television. I've left that up to them.
Right.
Sometimes we found it to be very effective, even on video conference. We have some pretty good facilities, yeah, as you've seen, and it works very effectively, and it's cost effective,
right,
to have him. To
That's
have
why
him
I was thinking
that.
That because they could be coming from some right far distance.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely.
It takes away from them being effective in their regions, but the teleconference is a good way of doing that sometimes.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That's all I had planned, Mr. Secretary. I'd be happy to answer any questions about our organization or to do further updates, or certainly further updates, but explanations of how our organization works as you would like.
Okay.
Can I just ask one question?
Yes.
I know one that ran through the auditor's report with the difficulty in communication, not only between divisions, but machines and computers, and implied in some of your reorganization, is there facilitation of better,
yes,
we're talking to each other?
Yes. I believe that message has been heard pretty loudly throughout VDOT in terms of not just communications, but effective communications. It's one of the reasons for pulling the public affairs office up, reporting directly to me. They are our communications link, both not only externally but internally as well. In terms of systems, I believe we're going to demonstrate for you next month a system that we put in place in just a matter of weeks that enables somebody to sit down and see where our program is. I mean, Mr. Kucharski and his staff was right. We didn't have any easy way of being able to report where we were in terms of progress on the six-year program. We're going to have a system, without spending a lot of money, and without fixing all of the enterprise issues at the basis of it, just a system that now can go out, reach down into a variety of systems, and pull out consistently information on schedule, budget, number of work orders, and advertisement dates. Those four things. Knowing those four things, you can do a lot of damage. And I wanted a system, and I'm proud to say that our staff has developed one that would allow me to come in on a Sunday afternoon and without a lot of trouble intelligently know where we are. The key about it, the key for me, is the fact that not only can I do that, but that a project inspector can do the same thing and see the same information. And if they're looking at the same information that they know I might be looking at on a Sunday afternoon, my guess is the information will generally be correct and updated. So we're ready to demonstrate that. Some of your colleagues got a advanced preview last month. It was just sort of a last minute thing, but we happened to be having a lunch in a board room and we hooked it up real fast and showed them a little demonstration. And I believe you'll be, if particularly if you knew where we were, you would be ecstatic. But I think even lacking that, you'll still be very pleased to see what we've done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that concludes. If y'all have ideas on workshop items that you'd like to see covered, if you think there are areas that we're not doing a good job in covering as a matter of information and education, I would certainly welcome those. I want to introduce next the other deputy secretary. I think he's Pierce Homer. Pierce works primarily in our office with VDOT and has also with a lot of legislative experience with members of the General Assembly. He's former Assistant Executive County Executive Director for Prince William County. We're very, very fortunate to have him on board. And I look forward to your getting to know him. As you'll see on the agenda, there is set here at 6:30 this evening at the in the blue folders is the name of a restaurant which is down on East Carey Street, dinner at 7, and then a cash bar for those who desire that at 6:30. And it's a nice tradition. It's an opportunity for us to get to know each other better, and that's sort of the social aspect of these monthly meetings. The hotel will provide you transportation. Anything else like that? If it doesn't put anybody out, since there are no committee meetings tomorrow morning, and usually there are two or three, like at 9 o'clock, so that people can get back home. Would you like to meet at 9 instead of 10 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll meet at 9 o'clock. And Catherine says she can get the staff get things set up here in time for a 9 o'clock start instead of 10 o'clock start. Catherine also has reminded me that after that meeting, that hopefully will give you some time to go through this photo ID process so you have access to the building. This is one of three buildings that houses VDOT. You've got one to the east of here, the what's called the annex building, and then the old hospital up the street. And so that's maybe an administrative matter that you can tend to.
Yeah, you better ask Rick about changing the time.
Oh, that's right. It's been publicized. Okay, well, now, can they do some of that administrative work before 10 o'clock, put up these photo IDs? Why don't you tell them where do they go?
No.
You can't get there without one of these, so we'll have to use them. But it's the next building over, and it's at the security desk, and you fill out paperwork, and they take your. Where should we all meet?
Mm-hmm. Your office.
I office is in the 9th Street.
You don't want to meet over there. No. You can't get in there either.
Why don't they meet here and we'll, you tell me where you want to get them.
Meet here at 9, anytime between 9 and 10. You don't need to come all at one time, because then you have to wait.
If you meet here, you'll need to come through the main door. And the main door. Same problem. If you come in the annex, you can't get in here without one of these. Or we can escort you.
We will have someone, let's have somebody at the front door, okay, Connie? At the front door.
Where we came in today.
Could we clarify?
Yeah, right up to here.
Come in the front door.
Mr. Clement, for the new members who are staying at the Crown Plaza, generally we meet around 6:15 in the lobby, and then the Crown Plaza has a van that will take us over, so we meet at 6:15, 6:20.
May we leave these papers here tonight? The ones that we don't want to study?
The few. The few that you don't want to study.
But nothing gets thrown
out.
Thank my... one of my senior members here, how that works. Okay, if there's nothing else before us, then we stand adjourned. Thank you.